Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski here with you. Jim, how we doing?
Good, good. It feels we're in like no man's land.
We are. I don't know what's
going
on.
It's such a weird, BBP.
It is. Well, it is. So luckily we didn't have to do the emergency, the emergency deuce on Thursday.
That was good.
So we were worried that if we said the Bengals lost to Miami, that we would have done an emergency BBP for everyone that was on the ledge losing their minds.
Right.
We didn't need to because the Bengals won pretty handily. They won 22-7. And at the end of the season, you know, like the details of these games tend to fade away.
Right.
You just remember, I'm just going to remember how bad the Dolphins are.
Yeah. Like how bad the uniforms were.
Yeah.
How bad
the only thing worse than their uniforms was their offensive line.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's partly a Bengals thing, but yeah. They also, boy, they were a train wreck. And now they're missing people. They had guys hurt, but it was awful. I mean, Geno sacked Ryan Tannehill with Jermon Bushrod.
Yeah, with one hand.
With one hand. Margus gets an assist on that. He pushed a guy into Bushrod's side that I think sort of put him
kinda
off balance.
Him.
And then Geno just planted him onto Tannehill. The Geno one step slap down for the sack though was glorious.
It's funny. I almost I had thought better of it, which was good because I almost made a Cameron Irving joke about something like, "Oh, Cameron Irving felt that one in his chest," and I was like, "Man, I didn't mean it that way." But when I tweet, I'm like, I almost tweeted that out, and I'm like, "No, that's not good because he actually has like a broken body or something going on right now."
That's what it says on the injury report. Just lists Cameron Irving,
broken
body.
Yeah,
just body.
So, but yeah, I mean, we talked about that, Paul. Like how, you know, this was a game where that defensive line would need to get to the quarterback and just take advantage of just bad dudes, like bad, not bad dudes, like the video game,
like bad at football.
Yeah, bad at football, and they did.
They did. They did what you're supposed to do. They end up winning 22-7. Move to 2-2 on the year. And so we're in this sort of no man's land right now, though, because we didn't have the second one to look forward to the Miami game, and we're going to have a BBP 2 on Thursday, kind of looking forward to Dallas, but we're going to just touch on everything. We're going to kind of we'll look some forward to Dallas. We'll talk about some of what we took out of the Miami game and where this team is at the quarter pole. I love using quarter pole. Which there are some really interesting trends through four games to look at. And now some of that will change as the offense evolves, especially when Tyler Eifert comes back, which it looks like all signs point to Sunday against Dallas. We will see the debut of Tyler Eifert, barring something changing at practice this week that we're not aware of. But everything looks like it's going to happen against Dallas. So there's some really interesting developments, and I want to start with one of them, and that's the red zone. We'll get to a bunch of stuff later. We'll have we'll talk about Vontaze Burfict and his first game back and sort of the Vontaze effect. We'll get into Pittsburgh and what they did with Le'Veon Bell against Kansas City and Baltimore and a very, very jaggy performance in London. Jim's gonna be mad. We'll get to all those things. But I want to start with the red zone, because to me, it is the number one takeaway of the first four games of this season. Is the way this team has moved the ball up and down the field consistently every week, really.
Yeah,
and over and over and over again been unable to push it into the end zone. They rank 31st now in the league in red zone touchdown efficiency. They're only scoring on 31% of their trips. And, of course, they had to kick 5 field goals against Miami, a game that they should have won by 40.
Right.
They end up letting Miami really hang around, having to make the Bengals defense having to make plays in that fourth quarter because they just kept having to kick field goals. I mean, it's easy to say Tyler Eifert's coming back, it'll get fixed, but is it that easy?
Part of me thinks yes, because he's – A.J. Green said this after the game Thursday, where flatly he's unguardable. And we saw that last year, 11 for 15 in the red zone, touchdowns on pass attempts. And, you know, and it's funny, in such tight quarters where Tyler Boyd can't really find seams and LaFell's, C.J. Uzama's had a couple drops. I mean, this is a way different conversation if he holds on to just one pass in New York and one pass in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But
and those games are different.
Right. And it's so you're right, Paul. I think what's more concerning maybe are the first and goal in Pittsburgh and the first and goal against Miami, and they lose yardage trying to run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be disconcerting. I don't know. Maybe that's a lot to put on Tyler Eifert. I know we talked about it last week. Like, is it a lot to put on Vontaze Burfict to fix the defense? I think he can fix these red zone issues.
I think he can, too, because it's the only issue.
Yeah.
I mean, well, no, I take that back. They still are struggling to run the football.
Yeah.
But
you want to get the
but they're moving the ball.
Right, exactly.
It's not like they're not moving the ball.
Right.
So if the way that they can move the ball is by that extended passing game and all the quick hits and whatever and Dalton's arm, whatever. I don't think anybody cares in this day and age in this league how you move it. There's lots of ways to sort of run the ball.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, Jeremy Hill has gotten plenty of touches. Giovanni Bernard has gotten a lot of touches, most of them in the passing game. I mean, he's going to blow away the Bengals franchise record for most receptions by a running back if he stays on this pace.
Right.
And there's no reason to believe that it would change dramatically. He had a lot of catches in Pittsburgh, but I think that there's no reason to believe he wouldn't continue to do stuff like that. So there's that element, but, you know, the fact that they're moving the ball consistently and getting into the red zone, they're just not finishing because the guy who finishes for them is not
right,
there.
Right.
I mean, he was the finisher, and when he's there, teams cannot just focus on 18.
Yeah. In such small spaces.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everything, right. Your ability to get any bit of separation, to have a giant catch radius,
right.
Is what matters when you start throwing in the red zone.
Right.
How many times did we see Dalton buzz a ball over the top of a defender's helmet, and Eifert or A.J. Green would go up top and get it?
A lot last year.
They would do it all the time, and he would also pre-snap move three pieces around in order to get the matchup because he saw Eifert had the advantage in this spot or Green had the advantage in that spot. The win in Baltimore, when he moved everybody around because he knew he could get AJ on that guy because they were keying on Eifert over here and throwing to the corner or whatever. Eifert in Buffalo when they would put him out there because he saw he had a safety on him, so they move everything away and you send him out one-on-one and an easy six. I mean, there's so many of those plays. You know, you just – how different would this whole team look? They probably would be 3-1.
Yeah.
They'd win one of those. I feel like they could win one of those two games if they were pushing the ball into the end zone a little more. But who knows? But I do think it's fixable. But it's still a problem.
Yeah.
Because there's also a chance that he comes in there and there's still issues because, you know, the fall off from Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu to Brandon LaFell and Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, Paul, because we talked a lot about Marvin Jones and that. He was kind of a lot of his passes, at least a year ago, he stretched the field quite a bit. But he was kind of that red zone threat, I guess, that Brandon LaFell thus far has not been.
He was the red zone answer in 2014 when Tyler Eifert got hurt and wasn't there. He had, you know, or not 2014, in 2013 when Eifert was young, when he had all those touchdowns.
Yeah.
He was a red zone beast.
So that stuff matters. But you're right. You know what you were saying, Paul. They are moving the ball. You would like to see a little more dispersion of targets and attempts. You know, when AJ Green goes good, but you know, and I know you wrote about that at Cincinnati.com over the weekend, where you know when you have that guy and he's open, you know, and Marvin Lewis is quick to say, look, teams can take away a wide receiver if they want. We saw it in Pittsburgh and Denver. So. You know, but I do think Tyler Eifert helps other things. You know, routes all go together, and we don't get to see it on fans don't get to see it on TV because they follow the ball around. But if Tyler Eifert's running up the seam, all of a sudden Tyler Boyd is a little more open.
Yeah,
you know, and things like that just tend to happen when you have two Pro Bowlers out in patterns.
He was the reason why we said you weren't as concerned about losing Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu. Well, you still got that. You're losing your number three passing option, but they lost their number two passing option for the first 4 weeks of the season. It'll be interesting to track how that evolves once he returns.
Right.
What do these red zone numbers for the first 4 weeks look like once you get out? And we're just talking about red zone.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Miami. Where there were, three more times where they got inside the 25?
Yeah.
And where you basically red zone.
Yeah.
And they got stopped. You know, they would just stall out. Something would happen. You're right. I think there's a lot more concern over their inability to run it when everyone knows that they're supposed to run it, to roll up on the goal line and just shove it in from the two.
Right.
That's certainly a concern. And you kind of wrote about the run game. There's a thought that things are turning around there a little bit. You saw, obviously, pieces of it against Denver. It seemed to take a step back against Miami, but there's a little more optimism in that area.
Yeah, they do. And it's interesting, Paul, because this goes back to our conversation week one when they gave up 7 sacks, where the O-line to a man and Marvin to a coach was like, there's individual breakdowns and we can fix that. And we've kind of seen them be better with pass protection. You know, Andy, the sacks against Miami and Denver kind of came late. But run game-wise, yeah, the raw numbers aren't there for sure. But I think Whitworth talks about there's a penalty, you know, that all of a sudden takes us out of a certain run fit or stops that sort of run momentum. You know, there's a hole, there's a bad snap that kind of... So it's interesting, they're not thrilled, but they feel like things are changing a little bit. And I don't know, Paul. You're a quarter in. So on one hand, they say it's early. But on the other hand, you're a quarter in.
Yeah.
So you think it's gotta turn one way or the other, right, in the next 2-3 weeks. Or then they are what they are, right?
Yeah. If you get to the halfway point, I mean, and there's nobody walking through that door that's going to be like a game changer for the run game.
No.
In fact, there's probably going to be people walking out the door at some point.
Right.
You got to feel someone's going to get hurt. I mean, it's just that by the numbers.
So they do feel like okay, I guess maybe because the attempts are up. You've seen more rush attempts.
Yeah.
So maybe they feel that's what's needed.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it hasn't been great. Let's bring in a couple of interviews. You talked to Ryan Hewitt after the game on Thursday. About the offensive identity. Of course, we talked a lot about Ryan Hewitt after those first 2 weeks.
Right.
His snaps have been up.
Yes.
Clearly, we weren't the only ones saying something about that. His snaps have been way up the last couple of weeks. And then Jeremy Hill was in a scrum after the game. You know, he had his most carries he's had all year. Again, it wasn't a huge gaining day, but it was the attempts were there. So here's Ryan Hewitt getting into a little bit of that conversation, and then Jeremy Hill after the Bengals beat Miami on Thursday night.
I know you guys want more, but does it feel like something's coming now with the run game?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, it's one of those things we kind of have to establish our identity. And I think we're still working to do that. And, you know, our identity in the past has always been smash mouth, and I think we're just trying to reestablish that. And sometimes it takes a little time to do that, you know, new guys and whatever else. But, yeah, I like the way it's been going.
Is that... kind of maybe where you see some fits and spurts. I think today was inside the 25. It was like 1 for 6. I mean, 5 field goals.
Yes.
First and goal to 2 again, in Pittsburgh. Is that kind of where, I know that's got to be frustrating. Is that still kind of where you guys are trying to figure out what works and, you know, to win at that point? I imagine that's.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we want to win those situations, and we need to win those situations. That's something, obviously, we're going to focus on in the future, and we'll take a look at what happened today and see what we can do to fix it. But those are situations and crucial games that we're going to need to win, and we're going to have to figure that out for sure.
You know, 4 games in, you guys have been doing that. I mean, you're knocking on the door. I mean, that however many times into the red zone, and just the touchdowns haven't been there. Is it as, I don't want to say it's as simple as one guy, but he did catch 11 red zone touchdowns a year ago. I mean, is there that part of it, too, where you are missing just, you're missing that guy, but
yeah,
trying to also figure out some other things?
I think that helps. You know, I mean, he's a special player, how old 85. That definitely helps. You know, that changes the way defensive scheme and amongst other things. But, you know, again, it comes down to us. You know, we guys get hurt, and that's the nature of the game.
Right.
And so we have to be able to play around that. We just have to capitalize. We're going to have to figure out what works for us and make it work.
It is, you know, Marvin mentioned sort of the self-inflicted wounds a little bit today. That combined with the fact that you are getting down there consistently, is that, I want to say encouraging, but at least bodes well. Like, those are correctable things. This, you know, as Witt said, it's not like we're getting beat up.
Yeah.
There's just these other things where we can fix individually. Is that kind of the
consensus?
Yeah.
I would say yes. I would say that everybody, at least in my opinion, feels that we're damn close. You know, we're very close, and we've done a lot of good things. We just have to figure out what's going to help us get over the edge and do get the touchdowns on first and goal from the 2, you know, and score, you know, on all the possessions in the red zone instead of 1 out of 6. But I mean, we are close, and we're showing flashes. We're just going to have to stay on the grind and work it out. I mean, you know, we'll figure out a way.
You know, being able to get the run game going, you know, 2 weeks in a row, a lot of attempts, a lot of carry, was stuff there last week? You know, on Sunday you thought there was a lot left. How did you kind of feel about what you were seeing this week?
A little bit of that too. I think they made a good job making adjustments, and they really made plays on today. So, but I think the biggest part, like I said, we stuck with it. We got our attempts up. Anytime you get your attempts up, you're running clock, keeping your defense off the field, and you know that's a good thing. But we just got to execute at a higher level, more longer runs, sustaining more drives, and you know executing on third down. So I think you know we got to get better at those things. But for the most part, I think you know it's good to come out with a win.
Is it getting a little frustrating, the 1 for 3 red zone? I think 1 for 6 inside the 25. I mean, those are prime scoring opportunities.
Yeah, it'll get you beat against some other teams. Our defense did a great job today keeping those guys from scoring. And, but, you know, we know that's not a winning style of football, especially for us, especially when you get down there. You got to get touchdowns, even if you get half the amount of touchdowns. But you got to get touchdowns. You can't kick to your kick field goal. So we'll get that fixed. And, you know, a short week of preparation, but that's no excuse. But we got to continue to keep working.
Marvin was saying some of it was self-inflicted, especially tonight with some things. I would imagine that adds to that as well.
Penalties, snap, botch snaps, like just all type of stuff that, you know, just can't happen. But, you know, when you come out with a win, some of that stuff's overlooked. So we just got to just take those things out and not keep fighting ourselves.
All right, so we've kind of touched on a little bit of where the offense, the run game and the red zone is at.
Yeah.
And good stuff from them, and Ryan Hewitt in particular talking about, you know, trying to break through and trying to get that rhythm. That they were Smash Mouth.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Hugh Jackson's identity was. And it's just not what Ken Zampezi's identity is. And I think that's clearly the difference between those two.
Yeah, it's and it's funny because I think, Paul, we've tried to avoid Hugh conversations about what they did, what they used to do, what Hugh did. And we've tried to look forward, be like, what's Ken Zampezi's identity and thing. And it's funny because we've heard that word, Ryan Hugh just used it there. Identity, what is it? AJ Green wondered what it was. Marvin Lewis was like, I don't know what the team's identity is. I mean, so clearly they're still searching. And I don't know if they were scoring 30 points a game doing what they're doing, I don't think we hear any of this. But until they score, I think they're gonna wonder what their identity is. And again, that goes back to Tyler Eifert. Maybe they do exactly what they've done, and 85 just happens to score 2 touchdowns instead of them scoring 4 field goals. And then we know our identity.
Well, they're averaging 19 points a game right now. So they would all of a sudden, if you had one of those trips into the red zone, each game is 7 instead of 3. I mean, you know, you're averaging 23 points
right.
a game. That's a little bit better.
Yeah.
That's more on the winning side for sure.
Right.
And you're also not going against a couple of the best defenses
right.
in football, certainly in the next coming stretch, the next 8 games, really. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Again, it'd be really interesting to track those numbers as they go after 85 comes back. All right, let's talk about the other guy that came back, Vontaze Burfict. You know, tangibly quiet for him, you know, with 3 tackles, a pass breakup. He played about 75% of the snaps. So
I was surprised by that, Paul. I expected almost coming out of, like, Pittsburgh. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we got spoiled because he does things like that.
Well,
I just
didn't understand why there – to me there should be no reason for him not to go out and play.
Right.
You know, outside of the fact that they chose to hold him out of the preseason, so say get in football shape, right?
Right.
Well, what has he had to do since January
right.
besides be ready to play against Miami?
That's true.
Right? So that whole thing kind of evades me, you know, unless there's concerns about his knee.
Right.
I don't really understand why people should be shocked that he came back and would play 80-90%
right.
or 75% in this case of the snaps. Like, he should be able to do that. That's his job, to be ready to do that.
Yeah. I guess I meant more of the, like you said, quiet.
Yeah.
I did. I sort of expected a early tackle for loss or an early sack, or that was maybe the surprising, because that was the thing, Paul. I was really curious. You and I talked about this a lot for the last 3 weeks, just how he would play. You wrote about this. It was a whole season preview, like what happens. I mean, he didn't have a penalty, you know, but he was just kind of there. I don't know. I guess I'd say he was there.
He was there. Their defense was better.
Yeah.
Now we don't, because it was Miami, it's right, really hard to judge.
Yeah. So maybe this week, maybe after 7 full day or full week of practice going down to Dallas and that old line and that running back, we'll really see if he's what kind of impact that is. But.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, and maybe it was as simple as he was doing a good job of making sure everyone was in the right spot so they didn't get gashed.
Yeah.
At all, really. And
yeah.
definitely not in the running game. The only bad play all game was the early deep ball to Kenny
right.
Stills on, you know, issues that continue to haunt this team, which is their secondary clearly having issues. But outside of that, you know, there wasn't a whole lot where you looked at and said, "Whoa, Tez is back."
Right.
You know, it was just sort of a game, and that's okay, but the bottom line is the Dolphins scored 1 touchdown.
Yeah.
And they really, outside of some garbage yards at the end, would have been held less than 200 yards.
Yeah.
That's not nothing.
No.
You know, and I, not to say, it's all because of 55. It's unfair
right.
to say that when the defensive line dominated
yeah.
the way that they did. But there are certainly, at least, there's certainly some portion of it that you can't say, hey, that's the best game the defense has played all year.
Right.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, no, the funny thing is, about that return to me, Paul, because that was what we talked about during the week. Is it unfair? We mentioned earlier with Tyler Eifert, for one guy to do anything or to do that, whatever that is, edge intensity, big plays, and statistically it wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, you know, a lot of that stuff goes beyond just stats, and you talked about it last week about how the mental preparation, communication issues that we saw in Denver that led to a big play. As far as I can remember, I don't really recall 3 guys running into each other.
No,
I mean, there were some plays where he shot a gap and took a chance and he missed, you know, so there were some moments where, you saw maybe in a week, in next week, he doesn't do that. But you know, you're right. You can't really deny the numbers. Look, Miami, passing wise had put up some numbers. Jarvis Landry's no joke.
you
know, so I mean there was obviously they showed early they had that big playability. So you're right, Paul. It's it was their best game and he was back.
He was, and they'll learn a lot more about the difference made on Sunday against Dallas in that right. running game. Obviously, they have the massive offensive line. Ezekiel Elliott is starting to get it going. They rank second in rushing yards per game and 10th in rushing yards per play. They're third in overall yards per game right now in the league. First and first downs. First and third down percentage. I mean, second in time of possession. There's no secret. Their offensive line is where it starts and ends. So it's sort of a strength on strength in that way. It's going to be fun to watch that. But
you know what that what this game allows me to do?
What's that?
Talk to Pat Sims.
Talk to Pat. Everybody loves
Dude,
talking,
I love
to, Pat
talking
Sims.
To Pat Sims.
Why? How could you not?
Yeah.
How could you
I
not?
I love talking to Pat anyway. But he was very excited about this game.
Yeah.
I have to go around and talk to all like the old school Bengals and guys who like played in this league when you know teams would run the ball like this.
Yes.
There's a handful.
Yeah, there are.
And he is Pat Sims is one of them, and he is very excited, Paul.
Sure.
He's like, this is why we got big guys.
Yes. That's why he's on the team.
Exactly.
He's on the team. Him, guys like him and Ray Maluga yeah. are gonna be huge this week.
Yeah.
Because it's coming downhill and it's coming right at them. And that's, and you know, the Bengals, when they want to stop the run, have been pretty good over the years at doing so because they invest in a guy who is really only a run stopping linebacker. And they invest in a guy who is only a run stopping defensive tackle who weighs 325 pounds.
Right.
Because that's what they want to be able to do is to stop the run and then get after the passer on third downs. So, you know. You're right. That will be. Pat Sims, just he's got to go to work.
Yeah.
You got to work. And he's going to be putting in some work this week. Big
so you're right. Those numbers are impressive, though.
They are.
For the Cowboys.
Yeah, and, I mean, I wonder if you could put pretty much anybody back there behind that line, they'd do well. But definitely if you put a top five pick back there and back him up with Alfred Morris, who's pretty solid.
Right. Oh, yeah, Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got – they've got really everything. And so the one issue that you thought they would have coming into this game – is, well, yeah, you can stack the line because you make Dak Prescott beat you. But Dak Prescott's beaten everybody. Dallas 3-1 right
over.
Now has not thrown a single interception yet. Boy, you can't draw it up any better for a rookie quarterback.
Right.
Come in, hand the ball off, don't throw picks. And he's done more than that.
Yeah.
He's made throws.
Yeah.
He's led big drives for them. Now, I think there's still some question out, well, who has Dallas really played yet?
Yeah,
I mean, they've
fair.
Got some wins against some teams that –
Yeah,
I mean,
being down 14 to the 49ers is not a good look.
No, and they beat the Bears.
Yeah, oh,
who are terrible.
Yeah, Bears
so,
are so bad.
I mean, let's. I think
it's kind of like Baltimore's 3-0, where they're. I mean, hey, they're 3-1.
3-1.
You can't ignore it, but I do think that they're. This goes back to you touched on it very briefly with this defense and some of the over the top issues. It reminds me a little bit of that Denver game coming in. Rookie QB, hand the ball off, and then, you know, Simeon hadn't really taken any shots.
Mm-hmm.
Bengals sold out against C.J. Anderson, shut him down.
Simeon torched him.
Yeah. And whether or not Dez Bryant plays with his broken leg, I don't know. But, you know, if he does play with his broken leg, I can't imagine he's as effective as, like, Dez Bryant healthy would be. So,
yeah.
There's some similarities there, Paul. I'm curious to see what the Bengals make Dak Prescott do in that regard. Like,
yeah.
Or if Dallas is like, no, we're better up front. Our seven are better than your seven. And I don't know. It should be really interesting.
Yeah. I think that Dallas is probably not going to change what they do much. I mean, they're going to try to bully them. And that's where the return of Vontaze Burfict really shows, because they've been so much better stopping the run with him in there. So will his presence, along with the Bengals having guys that can help stop the run, be able to make that at least a stalemate and turn it into Dak Prescott versus the secondary. And who knows how the secondary
right.
will do.
Right.
You know, I mean, when they continue to have these issues with letting up these big plays. So we'll see how that goes. You know, I do want to bring you some audio of Vontaze Burfict. We've got a little bit of him talking since his debut against the Dolphins and where he was at and sort of – how he's looking forward to, you know, the rest of the season. So here's Vontaze Burfict.
Some of your teammates were talking about how the energy was different. They put towards that toward you.
Yeah, you know, just try to be a leader. Like I said, I know the defense ins and outs, and you know, and I just hold everybody accountable, even myself. So I feel like
tell
we played
Tez,
pretty
I cut
good.
My hair for you. I did it for you.
I feel like we played a good game overall. I'm still mad about the touchdown because I feel like they shouldn't have scored on us. But I think they had, 220 yards total. So I was trying to keep them under 200. But, you know, that touchdown pass kind of hurt us a little bit. But, like I said.
My bad. Was it kind of like riding a bike getting back out there?
Oh, no. I ain't played a game since my last playoff game. But, you know, it's just good to get the rust off. And I feel like I played a good game overall. And at the end of the day, we got the win. So.
Number of plays. Where you wanted to do it? Could you do more? How'd you feel?
I feel like I could have done more, but, you know, the coaches had a game plan for me and, you know, switching me in and out with Vinny and Carlos, and they did a good job of that. At the end of the game, I start to feel my wind catching up, but, you know, I feel like every game just get better and better, and I feel like get my legs up on me.
This was the best defensive performance we've seen for this team this year. How much better do you feel like this defense is when you're out there, Montez?
I feel like, you know, we can be pretty good, and it's not just about me. You know, we have even guys that's on the sidelines that's substitution guys, and you know they're big credit to the defense too. Because when somebody's tired, they have to come in and step up to the plate. So, you know, it's not just me, but it's the coaching. Honestly, you know, we scheme up good plays and you know, get good protections and stuff like that for the week. So, you know, coaching helps us, and us just listen to the coaches and execute.
You mentioned before the game that you weren't going to change the way that you played. Now being back out there, did you feel at all mentally that you had to change anything at all, or did you just?
I'm not answering that question. Next question.
Chris, did you feel like when you made the play on Landry, did you kind of feel like yeah, I'm back when you made that?
No, it was just one play I made. I felt like a lot of the runs were going away from me, so I kind of had to run to the ball. But you know, I feel like the plays that came to me, I made. I missed a couple tackles, kind of was fatigued at the end of the game, but like I said, Coach G did a good job of getting me out the game, and when he seen that I was tired, so I wouldn't get hurt.
What kind of football shape did you turn out to be in?
I think I was pretty good, man. I wasn't too winded. You know, and I had great help from my teammates of getting the calls out, because obviously yelling to everybody, it can get you tired. So, you know, my linebackers helped me out getting the calls to the secondary, to D linemen, stuff like that. So it was an overall good game for the defense.
All right, so we've got that from Vontez and lot to be learned about Dallas. We'll get more into that in the BBP2 coming up later in this week. For now, you know what? You mentioned Baltimore being 3-1. They lose to the Raiders.
Yeah. Lindsey Patterson's Raiders.
Yeah, she loves the Raiders. Hey, help from an old friend, Reggie Nelson.
Yeah, right.
With the big hit. To break up the fourth down pass that Joe Flacco would have kept their possible game-winning drive alive. Would have put them right near where they needed to be.
Yeah.
Especially with Justin Tucker,
right.
Who can bomb it. And Reggie Nelson comes in, lowers the boom in the perfect spot, and that's it. That's it. Raiders win 28-27.
Yeah. I'm Baltimore shocked that Baltimore would lose to a halfway decent team.
Yeah.
You can't hear my eye. Did you hear my eye roll, BBP?
It's got to be very loud.
It was very loud. I haven't had a lot of faith in Baltimore at all this year, so I'm not surprised they lost.
No, but they only play like six good teams
I know, yeah.
all year. So
that's beauty of NFL scheduling. Yeah.
That's the way it goes. The Browns won't win that many games, though.
No, they won't.
They won't.
Oh, my God.
Not only did they lose, but like the NFL just keeps sticking it to them too.
Yeah.
How about that? The Duke Johnson's holding the ball. The referees are looking in the pile, and they just give it to the Redskins. Duke Johnson's holding the ball. Like, I have the ball.
That's one of
they
the.
He said he recovered. That watched him recover.
Oh, that's one of the strangest.
Yeah.
We've seen something like that happen before, that was seems so like, you know, obvious. Upon review of a turnover, would be like, oh, you know, that's mind blowing to me.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely. It is mind blowing. The latest mind blowing call that we've seen in the league this year. You know, we were talking about this earlier. And we see another couple examples of it this weekend, and the Bengals have been a victim of it multiple times. It's clear that a edict has been sent down by the league that we are done overturning close calls. Yeah, on replay. You know,
yeah.
We go back to the Tyler Boyd, the Adam Jones fumbles, and we saw it a few more times this weekend. where if it's not obvious, they are not going to overturn it.
Right.
That has been the case where if unless it showed that they, because they don't, you know, the thought is they don't want referees to get gun shy to throw flags,
right,
to make rulings. And the ruling on the field has far more weight this year than it ever has since replay has started, because they want the ruling on the field to mean something. So if it's super close, they don't really care about getting it perfectly right and analyzing every single frame. They kind of want the ruling on the field to be a little more powerful, and that's been apparent this year. It's an interesting thing to watch through a month. I don't know that many of us thought that was going to be the case or knew that that was something that they were going to be trying to do, but it's pretty obvious that's what they're trying to do right now.
Although, back to that play, I don't know how you still, though, when...
No, yeah, that's not even...
When Duke holding the ball and the line judge is signaling Washington football and also peeling players off a pile where there is no ball... was fascinating to watch.
It made me wonder if a ball boy had tossed a ball. Like, was that a second ball? Was there a second shooter? Uh-oh. You know?
There might have been.
That is one magic football.
Yeah.
You know? that's the only thing I could think of what could possibly
took
have
a
happened.
Right turn.
Took a right turn.
Paused in midair, mind you.
Midair, yes. Yeah, so that's happening. But elsewhere across the North, Pittsburgh just goes kung fu style on Kansas City.
Yeah.
And 43-14, and it wasn't that close.
No.
I mean, Le'Veon Bell comes back, that offense changes. Now, D'Angelo Williams, very nice running back, did some nice things. Le'Veon Bell is, he's the straw, man. He's the straw that stirs their offensive drink, and it showed immediately. And they showed why people were picking them as a Super Bowl contender this year on Sunday night.
Right. Yeah, it was interesting, Paul, because they went after, you know, mentioned deep balls with this secondary. They went after rookie of the year, right? Pro Bowler Marcus Peters. Right down your throat.
Right down your
throat. 50 yards in the air, Sammy Coates. Who? You know, I mean, it was just like they stretched the field. And I think early it was interesting. I think they split Le'Veon Bell out as a receiver his first handful of snaps and gave the ball to D'Angelo Williams. It kind of gives some different looks, and obviously we know those are things he can do. But you're right, it was as impressive as befuddling it was Carson Wentz destroying them the week before. So I'm sure they're somewhere in between those two games in terms of just how good they are. But you're right, Paul. When you bring back sort of an MVP caliber, you know, guy,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing their week to week, but there could have been a week of anger, kind of being taken out on the Chiefs as well. I think I said last week, it's something that Pittsburgh has done. They've won big games. They've been dominant in big games to make you think that they are a team that's just going to be, just a steamroller, and then they'll lose a game that you just never saw coming.
Right.
So we'll see if that trend continues from them. But with Le'Veon Bell back, it seems that offense is certainly a little more scary, and you get a little bit better view of why, there's a lot of people thinking that Pittsburgh's going to end up coming out of the AFC. Tom Brady comes back. What will the spread be this week?
Oh, my God.
Like, call the spread right now. If you had to make the number, Tom Brady's return with New England coming off a shutout loss.
Oh, to Rex.
The Browns.
At the Hugh
Belichick coming off a loss already
when he smashed the tablet.
Oh, Belichick coming off a loss is no one in Boston will be having a good week that plays for the Patriots, and to go play Hughes Browns winless.
The spread I want to say, or something that like actually maybe
make
what
make the I don't know the number yet, so I assume you haven't seen it.
No.
So let's try to predict what you think the spread will be.
What I think it should be is 20.
Yeah.
What I think it will be, because I don't think Vegas likes to go that way, although I want to say back in the Patriots undefeated year, they were rolling up some huge numbers
that
there.
07, when their offense was out of control, it was like they couldn't make a spread big enough.
Yeah, so I want to say it should be 20. That's with Cleveland getting 3 points for being the home team.
Yeah.
I think it'll probably be set like 14.
Yeah. I think it's going to be at least I think it's got to be at least like 17 and a half.
Okay, so we're...
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be. There's no way that anybody can go into not thinking that Tom Brady is going to just try to... He's going to pretend the Browns are all dressed in Roger Goodell helmets.
Yeah.
And I mean, and just tear it apart. And there's reports about maybe Gronk's hamstring being worse than people think, but Gronk still played. He was ineffective, but everyone was ineffective for the Patriots yesterday. Brady, Gronk, and everything else. Anger, Belichick rage.
Yeah.
Brown suckitude.
Right.
I mean, that is a perfect storm.
It is. Poor Hugh.
That is just unfair. Then the Bengals have to go.
Yeah.
And they will be there for the first home game for T. Brady.
Poor Marvin.
We've seen that show before. Marvin Deer in the headlights look is possible. That is possible in New England. We've seen that show. Although for Bengals fans, keep an eye on this Gronkowski situation.
It's a big deal.
If these reports are correct and the hamstring issue does become lingering, I mean, the Bengals traditionally have so much trouble with tight ends.
Yeah.
And Gronk has just Gronked them over the years. And so if there was a possibility he wouldn't be there, they'd just be dealing with Martellus Bennett, that would make that game a little bit easier. Although I don't think anyone is going to be thinking that is be chalked up in the possible win column for the Bengals. That would be the ultimate cherry on top win if they could actually make that happen. And what will happen? I don't know. We'll see. But, I mean, that makes the Dallas game even bigger because you're kind of assuming a loss in New England.
I
don't want to be 2-4. Yeah.
I mean, I can't change. I haven't seen anything through 4 weeks that would make me change what we started with in our season previews, where I think that's an L.
Yeah. I mean, unless Tom Brady gets hurt.
Yeah. Well,
against Cleveland.
I don't know.
By the way, you know what's my favorite side show of this whole Patriots versus Browns game? Is that the Patriots have been just taking every discarded Brown and turning them into good players.
Weird?
Yeah, it's like Belichick just found a glitch in the Matrix. He's like, this team that stinks so bad has all this talent on it, but no one knows how to get it out of them.
Right.
So every Brown that gets released, Belichick swoops them up and says, maybe I can teach them, I can put them in a position where they actually can use their talent, and they do. Like Jabal Sheard. I mean, I have to go through the list, but there's a bunch of them. Armani Bryant came off of his suspension this week. I'm assuming that Belichick probably already has him there. I mean, we can probably check the flight records, and he's already sitting there at Providence. Anyway, so that's just going to be a fun one to also keep an eye on this weekend. And then Patriots on deck after that. All right. That's so jaggy. This one, I have people tweeting at me. I couldn't help but shoot a That's So Jaggy hashtag out because everyone was watching. Anybody that was watching football in the morning was watching that game because of the 9:30 game in London, first London game of the year. I'm telling you, if the Jags would have blown that lead, Gus Bradley would still be there when we land in London at the end of this month.
Sipping tea and having a McVitie's.
That was it. That's it. You know, trying to get a job as like a consultant with Manchester United or something. I mean, it was – they get the ball. They're blowing the lead, right?
Yeah.
Indy scores on a long – somehow they leave Philip Dorsett all alone behind everyone. All they needed to do was just make Indy have to go down the field little by little.
Oh, my God.
And they just let the fastest guy run all alone for a 64-yard bomb to pull within a field goal, I think. So the Jags get the ball with like 2 minutes left. Indy has three timeouts. So you just either try to move the ball and get a first down or make them use the timeouts. Whatever you do, one of those two things has to happen, and that would be considered a success. What do they do? First down, out to the sidelines, 2 yard gain, out of bounds. How could that possibly happen? You're better off just take a knee. They should have just taken a knee three times, forced them to use timeouts and punt. So then they gain negative yards on second down. And then an incomplete pass on third down. So they didn't go anywhere. They only forced him to use one timeout, and Indy gets the ball. They might as well have had 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
Andrew Luck and two timeouts in a couple minutes, forget it. And then luckily, by some grace of God, they end up getting the fourth down stop on Andrew, only because the Colts offensive line is the only line worse than the Dolphins.
Yeah.
They had three rookies starting on the right side. Center, right guard, right tackle. And they all were bad.
Yeah.
Blythe? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
If you want some fun, go back and watch the condensed game of the Colts-Jags and just watch Blythe every play. 63, I think. I've never seen someone have a worse day. I mean, just terrible. But anyway, the Jags were jaggy, but they played them. Don't play the Jags in London. They're too good there.
They're too good.
They're too good there. They have truly made a home field advantage out of that place. So I always know I can count on my London win. I got it. 1-3, seven more to go.
Seven more to go. What's a longer road? You need seven more Jags wins or four Browns wins. Wow.
He needs five Browns wins.
Yeah, five Browns wins.
He needs five Browns wins. So they're 0-4, so they would have to go 5-8 the rest of the way.
Yeah.
What did I say? Where do they got to go? 5-7.
They got to go someplace they can't get to.
They got
to
go 5-7.
That's where they got to go.
They're not getting there.
No.
They are not getting there. So that was so jaggy. But, hey, big day for me. Gus Bradley saves his job.
Yeah.
So I can – and Mike McCoy, who I also have in the fire pool,
yeah,
blows a 13, at least a 13-point lead in the fourth quarter.
It's like almost statistically impossible.
It is.
ESPN Stats and Info tweeted out, it's like, you know, teams with 13-point leads and at that point in the game win like 98% of the time. And it's like the 2% are the Chargers.
The Chargers.
It's crazy.
Just the Chargers. Just Mike McCoy. I mean, that is a fireable offense, is it not?
Yeah, I think so.
Come on, Chargers. Pull the trigger. You got to get him out of there. Give me my dessert for free. So we'll see how that goes. All right. Now it is time to find out what is making Jim mad. Why are you so mad, son?
All right. This really bothered me. So I'm at Kroger. And, yeah, I had people coming over, a little break. And I was like, you know what, let me get a nice, you know, frozen pizza. I know that's sort of an oxymoron. But, you know, I'm looking, and I cannot find a pizza with just sausage on it. It's three meats. It's four meats.
Right.
Sausage supreme with, like, all kinds of other crap.
What happened to the straight sausage pizza?
Dude, it was unbelievable. It's huge. Like, there's all these brands ranging from, you know, your like, get like 10 for $8 ones to the, you know, to the $9 single one. I mean, like, so the whole gamut, you know, and I couldn't, it was unbelievable. There was a woman who she must have either, I thought A, she might call Kroger security on me or she definitely went home and said, hey, kids, like, I saw a crazy person at the grocery store.
What, were you losing it, like, yelling in the
window? Yes,
windows?
I was, like, muttering to myself. Like, I could not. And then I thought I would see one and ended up being, like, five cheese or five meat.
Right.
You know, with ham and other weird meats on pizza. It was not cool.
Why? I mean, maybe you can get into the basic pizza business. Like, just come in and just, that's your name. You're called Basic Pizza.
Cheese and sausage.
Cheese and sausage is all you sell. You just sell cheese and sausage pizzas.
Oh, my God.
Because it's an underserved market.
Now it is.
You got to correct.
I could not
believe correction. That's an excellent point. Tony's Pizza back in the day used to be, that was like, and it was based, Tony's Pizza was sort of the ones that they would serve at like the at lunch when I was in grade school. But you always knew you could get your cheese or just your sausage or your pepperoni. They kept it basic. It wasn't the best, but it wasn't the worst.
Right.
And it had what you wanted. It got the job done. You need some Tony's. You need to contact Tony's. If they're still in business.
I'll find them.
You'll find, or you'll take them out of business with your own basic pizza.
Yeah. That really drove me nuts.
If there's got to be security video of you doing that, of you just like muttering angrily under your breath, staring.
I'm sure there is.
The heat from your nostrils is fogging up the cool windows in the freezer section. I'm going to find what Kroger this was. I'm going to try to find that video. I want that in a big way. All right. I got no Swedish minute this week because I didn't hear from any Swedes.
Yeah.
If you're international, send me an email, pdanerjr@inquirer.com, and I will talk about what you had, what your question was.
Yeah.
But the Swedes.
I think the Bengals fan just like went away for the weekend. It's like they played
like we did.
Yeah, they played Thursday and it was like crickets.
Yeah,
out there.
Yeah, I couldn't even put a Twitter question of the day up in the walkthrough because everybody went to sleep.
Yeah,
there was lots of good other sports going on this weekend though. You had the last day of MLB season. You had Ryder Cup was fantastic. You had a full day of other football. College football was good on Saturday with some big games.
Last home series for the baseball club.
Yeah, people were really wanting to go watch the Reds Cubs. Although I did go on Friday I wanted to go get my last baseball game in for the year so I can, you know, tuck that away and hibernate it until next spring comes around. What I love about going to Reds games this year is just the lack of lines anywhere. Like I never have to wait in line to get a beer. I never have to wait in line to get some food. If I want to get Fry Box, I can get Fry Box because there's not going to be 45 people in the line. It's always long to get Fry Box at the beginning of the year. Well, there were all these damn Cubs fans there. So all the lines were long again. And I had to wait in all these long lines. Everything I wanted to do had a long line because there's a million Cubs fans that came to town. This is not why I like going to bad baseball teams games.
No line for you're right. There were I went Saturday and there were lines.
Yes,
and it's you know, bad clubs shouldn't have.
They might
lines
as well have been selling
bathroom.
Old style.
Yeah, the nacho line.
Oh
yeah, nacho line. Too long.
Too long.
That almost made me mad, but not as mad as not having sausage pizza.
As mad as not having sausage pizza. All right, we are going to have to get out of here, wrap this thing up. Again, we'll be back with the BBP2 on Thursday, as we always do. So make sure you check out that. We'll have Tyler Eifert Tuesday night for Beyond the Stripes at Hofbra House, 7 o'clock. Come on down, check it out, meet Tyler, listen to us talk. We'll actually talk about him probably playing now. And then if you miss that, though, we'll have Doc's hot seat with him on the BBP2 on Thursday. Of course, the PFF analytics, we'll have that for you. And Throwback Thursday this week will be former Bengals backup quarterback and a guy who found himself in a real tough spot at one point in time, Jordan Palmer, from an interview I did with him during the offseason, actually. But really interesting, always interesting to talk to him. So anyway, that's what we've got coming on Thursday, and after that, we will wrap it all. Let's wrap it all up here. What do you got, Jim? What are you thinking for getting out of here? Got nothing. We're going to Dallas this week.
Yeah,
going to Dallas this week. I feel like it's got maybe some. It's got to be like Big D country. Usher's from there. If that does anything for you, probably doesn't.
Well, Usher does more for me than. Country music.
Than country music does. That's fair. You know what song I like by Usher?
What song you like?
My Way. I like My Way. That's like a throwback. I think that's from his first.
Yeah.
I think it's from his old, first album. Yeah. Right?
Old, young Usher.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to stretch. This is a stretch. You know what Ken Zampezi's saying when everyone's hating on him for not running the ball enough, not being effective enough? Moving the ball, though? Doing it my way.
Yeah.
He's doing it his way.
Yeah.
That's a real stretch.
Well,
but it's still that's where Usher's from. He's from the D.
Yeah.
The Big D. So we're headed down there. So you got to do that. And we're going to do this trip our way. You know what I'm saying? We're going to have a good time.
I feel it.
I don't know what we're going to do on Saturday. If anybody is making the trip down to Dallas for this game, it's my first trip to Jerry World.
I've never been either.
Yeah, I mean
the 60-foot Jumbotron. Yeah.
So I'm excited about that, but you know Oklahoma and Texas is Saturday at noon at the Cotton Bowl. So the old Texas State Fair. So if you're going, if you happen to be going, you're getting there early on Saturday, try to get that would probably be a fun game to go see, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
If you want to try to do a double dip weekend. So we're basically travel agents here at the BBP.
Yeah.
We take care of you. Anyway, let's bring in Usher and let him take us out my way, and we'll talk to you later this week on the Deuce. Trying to do what I'm doing, but you can't, 'cause I do what I do.
say, ooh, ooh, why's he so fly? She tease me, never she wanna get freaky. You can get mad if you want to, say whatever you want, but she still gon' give it up. She likes it my way, my way. Two seaters with kicks, new kicks, it's all in the mix. All turn, no tricks, they turn for me. Catching bricks don't concern me, so forget it, little midget. My mind on seven digits before I pay heaven skies to visit. I'm pulling all stops, locking down all spots. Saying you.